America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
But Anthony, this burrito bowl is going to take me the entire show to eat, because I swear we have the world's smallest forks in this place.
The Hoffman Show.
Like, I just got one of the little plastic forks out of the kitchen. Like, how am I supposed to eat a burrito bowl with this?
You can't.
Well, now you tell me.
On the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Two chains, got two chains. I need two forks.
Yes, sir.
It's the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 on a Thursday here, also streaming live on YouTube, where you're getting a nice little roller coaster ride right now as I adjust the camera. That looks better. Also live on the free Odyssey app where you don't have to see me. Matt Essig is in today as Anthony's at a wedding. There was a Thursday noon wedding. Matt, that's it's a bit of a wacky bit.
That's a time to have a wedding, I guess.
I mean, I love people, folks that have weddings, they're like, I'm going to do it on Sunday night because it's cheaper. It's like, yeah, it's cheaper because it sucks for everybody else. And I get it because it's your wedding, but we're the everybody else. So that's always not the best, perhaps. But, you know, if whatever folks needed to get married at noon on a Thursday, I hope they're in love and I hope they have a great wedding and I hope they have a lovely marriage and I hope Anthony had a great time.
Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations to the bride and groom. Even though you took my producer away. But it's okay, because Matt's here. Matt's here, and he's got a very colorful dinosaur shirt on.
Got to bring the color to the YouTube, you know?
Yeah. Wear your Thursday best. Because, you know, you could wind up at a wedding. That's why you wear, now we brought it full circle, your Thursday best. 4:30 today, Dan Pizzuta will join us from the 33rd team. You can check, of course, his work out there. He's been great with us all season long. So we will talk with Dan coming up then. 5 o'clock, we get a Browns insider from our sister station, 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland. Never read the comments as well. But we start off with Joe Witt Jr., who did his talk-in today. Of course, the coordinators speak on Thursdays. You know this by now. We're in a nice rhythm of football season. And Joe had some interesting things to say today, for sure. It kind of started when he was asked about how the corners played against Arizona. And he went back to this a couple times throughout throughout the press conference, where he's like, you know, nobody's good enough. I'm not good enough. They're not good enough. Like, oh, that guy, Frankie Luva, is pretty good. Bobby Wagner's been pretty good. That's not good enough. And he just, there's clearly, I don't call it unrest, because I feel like they do feel like they're figuring things out and they're on the right track and they're not making the same mistake twice. And there's a lot of complimentary things in here too. But the hunger to get better and the dissatisfaction with what has been is just palpable from Joe Witt. Again, the question here, how do the corners play against Arizona?
I thought they were sticky this game because, you know, it's rushing coverage. You know, we had the four sacks, but he had to hold the ball. And so that tied in together. I thought Juice did a good job of covering. Even when we were in some of our man looks and spinning out to cover two, the communication, they sold the looks and made the quarterback hold the ball in those standpoints. So Noah had that first third down PBU, which was tight coverage, and Bobby did a really nice job of help coverage when the low crosser came and Mikey couldn't get to him, and Bobby knocked him off, and that made the quarterback go to a second read, and Noah was sticky in the Alexo route that he got. So you know, they were stickier, and we just have to continue that. Our completion percentage against us is higher than I'm used to, and so we have to get that done.
So, all right, that's sticky, getting there, better, but not good enough. And I thought one of the things that was interesting about Witt's presser today and some of the things that he said was that he took ownership of a huge part of this. He said, we have been doing too much. The call sheet needed to get shrunk down. We did that. That definitely helped a lot because guys are able to play faster, freer, because they're more in control. They're more knowledgeable. They're more locked into the details of the smaller call sheet because they don't have as much stuff to remember. But it does prevent you problems because, for instance, stopping the run and some of the short passing game is hard when you've got all these resources dedicated to making sure that you don't give up big plays. So how do you try to now against Cleveland, a team that has struggled to generate big plays down the field, one that also struggles to run the football in the short passing game? Basically everything against Cleveland has been a struggle this year. How do you make sure that you get that balance right when you're not exactly sure what it is you need to protect against versus some of the big plays that you're trying to prevent in previous weeks?
Yeah, I mean, it's a holistic deal. You know, when you're stopping to run, you also have to look at, you know, who they have at their skill positions and who do you want to take away and when do you want to take them away. You know, they can push the ball vertically. They have really good receivers with Judy and Coop out there. Had history with them. David's going to be back. He's a weapon that they haven't had. You know, so let's remember Cincinnati when we went into that one, they hadn't had all their guys. And then, you know, Higgins came back and they did whatever they did to us. And then the next game they did the same thing. So when you get those weapons, it changes the play caller's mindset. So they have David coming back, and he's gonna add a third element with those guys.
I'm curious if he meant in the transcript they said David Bell, one of their receivers, but I think he might have been referring to David Njoku, the tight end, who is a significant weapon for them. And that's the thing, is it's hard to prepare. Like on tape, I'll tell you, Cleveland looks trash. Like their offense sucks. Their offense can't do much of anything. And part of it is they're really bad at the basics. They don't run the football well, which is wild to watch because it's Cleveland and their offensive line's been great and their rushing game's been great. But they brought in Ken Dorsey, who got fired in Buffalo because they didn't run the football enough and made life hard on Josh Allen. And even though they were putting up pretty good numbers under him, like there was a missing element that we've seen since. The offense is just easier for Josh and it's more consistent in Buffalo week over week, despite what happened in Baltimore on Sunday night. Who's the new OC? Joe Brady took over up there. But they fired Alex Van Pelt, who ran a pretty good system because Watson was bad, and they brought in Ken Dorsey, and Watson's still bad because Watson's bad. And now they can't do all the other stuff that at least supported it and made it so they could win football games. But if they have David Njoku, if they get some of their other skill guys back, if their offensive line can be a little healthier, maybe they can figure some things out, or just they get better. Like you'd say, hey, let's stop doing the things we're bad at and start doing the things that we're good at. And maybe that works. And by the way, that's exactly what Joe has tried to do as a play caller on his side of the ball. I talked about that complexity versus simplicity. Here's Joe speaking to that directly.
Well, that's what I had to figure out this last week, because apparently I was doing too much. And when I say too much, it might not have been the calls necessarily going in the game in those previous games. It's the load that we had to practice. And so let's not even practice that much stuff, because let's look at what's working in the games, what can we execute, how can we play fast, and then we can add some complex looks for the quarterback and still get after him. So that was the challenge, and not trying to do too much. And I was probably trying to do too much too early.
So there you go. You get, you know, you practice seven plays, seven looks instead of 20, then you're probably going to be better at those seven, even if look number eight might have been kind of useful in a certain situation. But we all know football is a game of execution. They executed a lot better. I think the other thing, too, against Cleveland specifically is this offensive line is not playing very good right now, and they're banged up. So, like, they don't even have their best players, and the backups are not playing well. All four of their tackles were on the injury report yesterday. We should get the Thursday injury report here shortly. I'll check and make sure it actually hasn't come out in the break, because this is kind of around the time that it typically does. But, yeah, they got all four of their tackles hurt. Wyatt Teller, they're all pro, all everything guard, is on IR. He wasn't even playing that well when he was in there. Which was bizarre, again, to watch the tape and be like, is that Wyatt Teller just getting beat? But they're not calling. They're like, Logan made the comparison this morning when we were taping the Take Command preview. He's like, basically, Ken Dorsey's a lot like Eric Bieniemy was last year in terms of setting up the offensive line in bad situations. Bad run calls, not what they do well, a lot of drop back, and they really struggle with the communication up front. And so hopefully you don't need a bunch of exotic blitzes. You don't need a bunch of that stuff. You can just run a couple simulated pressures or even straight four-man rushes, or not straight four-man rushes, but like the four down guys, your defensive line rushes, but you run a twist or a stunt where guys crisscross up front, and that could be enough to get you a sack or get pressure. And then with Watson, like, he carries the football real loose, chance to create turnovers. There's been a couple of batted balls that he's got interceptions. I think two of the three, if not all three of his, are batted balls somewhere in the field. But like his first pick of the year against Dallas, Michael Parsons batted at the line of scrimmage. So you have opportunities here to create turnovers in a way that I think is greater than every other game that you've played this year. Obviously, Washington gets the one last week with Luvu punching the ball out against Arizona, but it would be great if they could get a couple this week because there will be opportunities. Now, the other side of the ball, that's a different story. Cleveland, very tough there. We'll talk much more about the Browns as we go with Dan Pizzuta at 4:30, with our Browns insider from our sister station up at 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland coming up at 5. But you'll hear a little bit more from Joe Witt and Cliff Kingsbury next on the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app. Dan Pizzuta from the 33rd team for his weekly visit coming up at 4:30. Right now, though, the hype train has been, I don't want to say a little out of control, but it's starting to get a little bit out of control. The national show is starting to get their claws dug in on all kinds of variety of things. And look, the Commanders have been really good so far. They deserve adulation. They deserve attention. They deserve to be talked about positively. And with that said, you know, when you start talking about, oh, is Jaden Daniels the best quarterback in the NFC? It's like, through four games, the first one wasn't that great. You know, he's really good in week two, but like they did only score 21 points on the Giants. So that seems relevant. He's been awesome the last 2 weeks. He's been absolutely sick. And his completion percentage is great. And, you know, he scrambled for a bunch of yards. Like there's a lot to like. Like Jaden was the offensive rookie of the month. Named that today. And that's pretty obvious. And he's been in, I've said, like, he belongs in the MVP conversation. Best quarterback in the NFC? I don't know. Sam Darnold's 4-0, and he's been sick. There's probably some other guys that I could think of that have been pretty good so far. But even then, like, okay, so he's been the best quarterback in the NFC for four games. A lot of guys have been the best quarterback in their conference for four-game stretches in their career. Let's have a little patience. Let's make sure that we have some context here. That'd be cool. Not runaway freight trains of hype. So there you go. Commanders, NFC favorites. Like, whoa, okay, hold on. Like, a lot of y'all hated this team, thought they were going to be bottom five in the league. And so when you got the runaway freight train on one side, I think sometimes it's important that we look at absolutely absurd comments from the other side of things as well, which brings us to the comment section on YouTube right now. And Dion, and who I think is a new subscriber. So, Dion, I hope that whatever I'm about to do to your comment here, you enjoy it enough that you don't leave us. Because I do believe you commented yesterday that you're a lifelong fan and you're a new subscriber and you like the show. And I will say, Matt, as Essig is in today for Anthony, if he does leave, I'm just going to blame you because he did like the banter and the camaraderie between me and Anthony. So you just have to say, you're going to have to take the L here.
I'm real sorry. Dion, stick around. He'll be back on Monday.
Yeah. So that, right. Hey, say subscribed, you know, like let's not, if you don't want to listen for the rest of the show because Anthony's not here, then fine. Slash what I'm about to say in response to your comment. But at least come back on Monday for Anthony. Do it for young Haney. But Dion, your comment's one of the silliest things I've heard in a long time in the Commanders universe. Dion says, Joe Witt's job is on the line for the next five games. Don't care who we have on defense, but if they don't improve tremendously, he should be worried. What? No one has to get fired in football. No one has to get fired in sports. It's okay that things aren't always optimal because these are human beings and it's competition. And when you have a competition, the other team gets to try too. When you're in the NFL, the other side gets paid too. And one, they've literally gotten better every week. So I don't understand the premise of if he doesn't get better, he should get fired. And it's like, you mean the guy who's already getting better? The guy who is making adjustments, the guy who is getting more out of his players each and every week, the guy that is shrinking down his call sheet and finding what works and knocking out what doesn't, that, you know, perhaps he'll eventually regrow it. But right now, he seemed to find a decent balance. His team did give up only 14 points last week, had four sacks, got a turnover. We'll see if they can get some interceptions. That'd be cool. You know, he talked about how the completion percentage that they've given up is higher than he's used to. And so he's definitely not satisfied. It's not like he's like, I'm doing a great job. Go me, go Joe Witt. And by the way, these four games that he's coached so far, in which the team that he is coaching, for whatever it's worth, is 3-1. These are the first four games Joe Witt has ever had as a defensive coordinator. And I think that we need to remember that it is okay to have patience with people beyond young players, right? And Joe Witt Jr. is like a grown-ass man. He doesn't need anybody, quote-unquote, defending him here. This is like just analysis, right? Young coaches get better too. Like Cliff Kingsbury in Arizona is different than Cliff Kingsbury now. And I specifically pick Cliff because nobody can find a bad thing to say about the dude right now. Like Cliff is on fire. He's the darling of the NFL. He is absolutely deserving of that because he has called four outstanding games. He has shown a tremendous growth within the season in terms of the offense. But I think Cliff did a lot of growing based off of his life experience. He was a young coach when he got to Arizona. He was a younger coach when he took over at Texas Tech. And he got, I mean, he's joked about this, but it's not a joke. He got fired into an NFL. He got fired from his alma mater in college. Do you realize how reluctant most ADs are, most school presidents are, to fire a guy when he was the star quarterback at that university? And he did. They fired Cliff from his alma mater, and the Arizona Cardinals were like, that's our guy. That's not, like, what was Cliff supposed to do? Say no to that money? Hell no. And by the way, he signed an extension in 2022, and he's still getting paid by Arizona and will be till 2027. Good for him. I'd keep my house in Arizona too. But Cliff is not the same guy that he used to be. You know, Sean McVay's talked about this extensively. People are like, oh, Sean's just, he showed up and he was awesome in LA. And guess what? He was pretty awesome the second he got a head coaching job. But he's gotten a lot better too. He's learned how to manage different things and make it more sustainable for himself. And in turn, that has allowed him to grow schematically in how he manages people and all that kind of stuff. Kyle Shanahan has grown in those areas. And so for Joe, I think he's obviously tremendous with people, like his way to motivate. He's very direct in his communication. There's a lot of good stuff, but he's never been in that chair before. He's never called a defense. And calling defense is hard. You have to anticipate what the other team... First, you have to... Like, this is purely logistical, right? What personnel is the other team in? Oh, and you either have to be able to read their cards or check who's on the field when they get in and out of the huddle or as they send guys on. And you have assistant coaches that help you with that. But first step, hey, what personnel are they in? And then what are we matching with? And then based off what are we matching with / what personnel are they in, what formations and how are they going to deploy that personnel? Because like if you're playing the Commanders right now and they go to 13 personnel, I don't know what the hell you do if you're a defensive coordinator. Like if you're Jim Schwartz this weekend, are you going, we need to get our little guys on the field because they might spread those three tight ends out. We need to get our big guys on the field because they might go into a heavy set and try to run the football. Because the Commanders can do both. That's why it's so dangerous the way that Cliff has deployed the two running backs, the three tight ends, the different receivers in different spots, all that kind of stuff. It makes it really hard. So you have to say, okay, based off their personnel, this is what we think they're most likely to do, and these are our best guys to match that from a personnel standpoint. Then I have the call that I need to get in quickly so that my defense can communicate it to each other and make whatever adjustments they need to. And by the way, that all happens way faster than I just said it because I just somehow probably took a minute and 20 seconds or something to explain something that happens within the first 15 seconds of a 40-second play clock or a 25-second play clock. It is really hard. And if you have too many plays on the sheet, you might not get the exact right calling. You have to have a feel for that. So shrink. And by the way, your players might have not practiced that look that you call as many times as you want. So you make adjustments. There's a management aspect to this to get everybody on the same page, to understand who's available. Because, hey, I want to call that blitz that we practice all week. Oh, wait, that corner is out right now because he's either tired or hurt. Oh, maybe I don't want to do that because the second guy, the guy that's going to wind up being in that spot, didn't practice it as much. And all this is happening like while the clock is running. And with that said, all those factors that Joe Witt, like that's the job he signed up for. It's the job he got paid for. He is getting better at that. Everybody's getting better at their jobs. Have you seen the results on the field? They won 42-14. And so the idea that even with the Commanders having a defense that was, you know, we all knew the stat going into last week. I was one of the people saying it. One of the worst DVOAs. DVOA is a stat that basically measures how well you do in every situation. So if you know, for instance, if the ball is at the 39-yard line, the opponent's 39-yard line on 2nd and 10, how has everybody else done in that situation? Are you doing better or worse than that? You know, plus two defensively is bad because it means you're doing 2 yards worse giving up yardage than everyone else. But they were historically bad in DVOA. And then they went out and they smashed the Cardinals. Kyler Murray was awful. They were a huge reason why he was awful. They held Marvin Harrison in check. They gave up a lot of yardage on the ground, but part of that was by design, and that got better as the game went. And so the idea that anybody could possibly be in trouble, specifically Joe Witt, is terrible. And I think the thing, like, one, it bothers me, it genuinely bothers me that people are so flippant about firing other human beings. Like, this is their job. Those are real people, even if they're coordinators, but or coaches in the NFL making a lot of money to coach football. And that's part of the business. The stakes are high, but like, we can be humane about it. Two, I think it bothers me because it's like, it's so silly to not let you, like, why would you take the bumps if you don't get the rewards, especially if you see the guy growing? And three, I think specific to this fan base, specific to lifelong Commanders fans, the guy that's not here anymore that everybody hated for good reason, as in Dan Snyder, part of the reason everybody hated him is because he acted like an owner, like a fan. Like, he constantly just was like, I don't like that person, fired. Or this guy sucks, I want him fired. And you hear all the stories coming out of Ashburn. So if you hate it when the owner does it, why are you doing it? Stop doing that. But stay subscribed if you're watching on YouTube or if you're listening to this later on a podcast. And if you're listening to the radio, keep listening because Dan Pizzuta is going to join us next.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Again, if you miss any part of the show, the Hoffman Show podcast is a great place to catch it. Just search the Hoffman Show in your favorite podcast app. Joining us now, as he does each and every week on Thursdays, is our pal Dan Pizzuta from the 33rd team. He's a writer there, and one of the things he wrote this week was his weekly quarterback rankings. Dan, I might have some bones to pick with you later about your quarterback rankings. So we can warm up with some Commanders, but then we can spar a little bit about some quarterback rankings if you're down for that.
And sure, you would not be the only one.
Rankings are so much fun, aren't they? Everyone always agrees.
They are great. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
I'm very happy I agreed to do these this year.
Yeah. I mean, look, all I'm going to say is Kyler Murray's ranking after I just watched what happened to him in Arizona. There might be something to talk about. So let's actually talk about it through the people that did that to him. The Commanders defense played by far their best game of the season. They are not satisfied with where they are yet, but they clearly are making improvements. What did you see on that side of the ball from Washington that perhaps gives you hope that that side can support Jaden Daniels, who I know you also wrote about this week, and what this offense is doing?
Yeah, I think it was a well-timed game of coming against an offense that I think this pass rush kind of really was able to click a little bit and make the impact you were kind of hoping it might have been able to make. They blitzed a little more than they did the previous, I think, 2 weeks. And it just kind of it got through when some of the coverage was able to hold up. They had some well-timed blitzes that came with, you know, either you had a guy who was I think one of the sacks was, you know, Bobby Wagner was, you know, spying Kyler a little bit. Then he ends up, you know, rushing late when he doesn't have anyone to really take account of. So I think there were things that kind of were put into the game plan that worked really well. And the defensive line was able to hold up. I think the interior defensive line that you were really hoping would be the the piece that took over for this Washington defense eventually. I think they all had a good game there. So I think it was they just kind of controlled the line of scrimmage. And then I think when you kind of look at what Arizona was doing in the passing game, it's still a little siloed, and there's not a lot of, you know, creativity in a lot of these routes. You know, Marvin Harrison Jr. is just kind of running vertical down the sidelines, and, you know, that's easier to defend than some of the other, you know, offenses that Washington has been facing. So I think a lot of it just kind of played into Washington's hand, and I think they had a good game plan to defend it.
You know, one of the things that we talked about earlier in the week and kind of when we were still doing a lot more game review was that the performance was definitely better. And guys like John Allen, like you said, showed up, and Daron Payne showed up in ways that they haven't this year. But it actually wasn't that much different than maybe against Cincinnati. The difference is that Ja'Marr Chase is way better than Marvin Harrison at this point in their careers, and Joe Burrow is way better than Kyler Murray, and especially in specific ways that really hurt Washington, getting the ball out quickly, you know, being able to see through blitzes and stuff that really hurt Kyler. How much of any, like, when you try to determine, you know, hey, defense, this was the impact, offense, you know, hey, a better quarterback, a different quarterback, even if they're similar levels but different skill set, where they're stronger or weaker in a certain area, you know, how much of the performance is based off of the opponent? Like, so if you take all of kind of that theory, how much of last week for you was Washington improvement versus Arizona not being nearly the level of, say, Cincinnati the week before?
Yeah, I would say, you know, it was probably a little bit of both. I think it's definitely good that Washington at least, you know, looked like they were more together, you know, in a sense. And I think we've been kind of seen when things go wrong for this Washington defense, it's, you know, a blown coverage in the secondary, something is, you know, miscommunicated along the way. There wasn't as much of that, which is good. And I think they kind of, you know, stay true to some of the easier concepts. I think looking, they dropped how much they played quarters like in this game. So they weren't trying to do as much as like the, you know, the more complicated matching type of coverages. So it was somewhat of that. I think Arizona did certainly, like, you know, in the route concepts they were doing, certainly that helped too. And I think the offensive line, Arizona really just wasn't playing particularly well on Sunday either. So I think it was a lot of, you know, this was definitely a better game from Washington's defense, just kind of overall from, I think, game plan and execution. And it definitely helped that I think Arizona had a bit of an off day, and it not kind of what we had seen the, you know, previous 3 weeks of what, you know, they were kind of able to do from some explosive plays and some of the ways they've been able to hold up on offense too.
Dan Pizzuta, 33rd team, with us here on the Hoffman Show. Of course, they were also chasing the game, I mean, immediately in the second half, if not some in the first half as well, because of what this Washington offense is doing. You wrote about it in your weekend reaction column, which is called First and 10. And Dan, we here are big fans of segments called First and 10, as we do First and 10 to open the show on Monday. So salute on the originality on that one for both of us. But you wrote about Daniels and this offense. What is it like? Let me ask you this, because we talk to you every week, and like, we know some of the things that are working. What did you see that was new, that was even more impressive against Arizona compared to the first 3 weeks, which included many good things as well?
Yeah, I think just kind of little by little right now, we're seeing things start to just open up in the offense. And, you know, we started talking that week one, it was like, oh, this is just a condensed Cliff Kingsbury offense. It's going to be all, you know, screens and slants and things behind the line of scrimmage. And, you know, we kind of raised a little bit of concern. But, you know, week by week, it's, you know, continued to open up a little bit. In the first and 10 column, I have a kind of a passing heat map of week by week. And you can just see how the ball is getting pushed, you know, progressively further down the field, which I think is really good. And I think also what they're doing is, you know, they've been able to use play action a little bit more. That's kind of opened up that intermediate area of the field that they weren't throwing to over the first, you know, first 2 weeks, really. And I think teams have started to kind of be a little afraid of what Jaden Daniels can do in the run game. So they stopped blitzing him quite as much. And I think his blitz rate has dropped kind of every week. Since, you know, it was about the same weeks two and three. But, you know, week one, they came out blitzing 42% of the time. He was blitzed 16.7% of the time last week. So I think just how teams are defending right now are giving him more space in the pocket also. So not being blitzed, having that play action is allowing him to stand in the pocket a little more. There's now more time to be opening up things down the field. And I think everything's just kind of coming together of just being able to add that element to the passing game, which is what we wanted to see early in the year. And now it's just kind of, you know, it's coming week by week.
Yeah, no, the heat map stuff is great. I definitely would suggest everyone. It's outside of, hey, you can see it opening up week after week. It's hard to explain without seeing it. So I would definitely suggest everyone go to the 33rdteam.com and find Dan's first and 10 column from earlier in the week and check this out. You also have this amazing stat, just the greatest coinky dink here. There have been three games by rookie quarterbacks with at least 0.6 EPA per play and a 60% success rate since 2000. Daniels has had two of them in the past 2 weeks, and the other came from Marcus Mariota in week one of 2015, but with only 15 pass attempts. I mean, you want to talk about bringing in the right mentor for your guy, Dan. Mariota was clearly the model. Now look at Jaden go, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. That was one of the crazy things to look at, because I think the cool thing about what Washington is doing right now is they have been able to figure out how to stay away from the negative plays. And I think that's certainly helped. I'm not sure how much, at what level that's going to be able to sustain. I don't think they're going to get through, you know, one turnover for the rest of the season. But the way they've just kind of been able to have a correct answer for pretty much everything. And very early on, that was, you know, Jaden Daniels scrambling when he could. But now it's, you know, taking some smarter plays. I think they're more diverse in the run game also. So when you just kind of have all of those options together, it's been made for a, you know, crazy successful offense right now. And it's really humming.
Dan Pizzuta, 33rd team with us here on the Hoffman Show. That blitz number is pretty staggering, too. Tampa blitz 42% in week one. Weeks two and three, around 29%, just 16% by Arizona. But we know Jim Schwartz is coming to town, and he is a very, very aggressive defensive coordinator for the Browns. Do you think he pulls back on that some, or is he just going to be like, I am Jim Schwartz, I am here to blitz, let's party?
Yeah, Jim Schwartz is a guy who's going to do what he does on defense. So I would expect a little bit more blitzing there. But this is also a team that can create some pressure with the front four. They're going to be a very aggressive type of defense. They do like to blitz. They do like to play a lot of man coverage. I'm very interested in what that is going to look like, because they haven't been quite as good in coverage. This hasn't been as good of a defense just kind of overall as it was last year, when it was arguably, you know, the best in the league, or, you know, 1-2 with Baltimore. So they haven't been quite as good, but they've still been able to, you know, create some havoc when, you know, they've done what they've been doing, just kind of being aggressive, creating pressure. But it's when you have a quarterback like Jaden Daniels, it's very hard to play man coverage at a high volume against that, because you kind of always, those defensive backs are going to have their backs to the quarterback. And when you have a guy who can run, like we've kind of seen that, like you can't do that against Baltimore. You can't play man coverage. And even against like the Buffalo, you really can't play man coverage, because the quarterback is going to be able to, you know, take off and run wherever there's a little bit of a hole. So I'm very interested to see how these kind of two philosophies are going to mesh, because I think Jim Schwartz is very much going to do what he wants to do, because he only really knows one speed. But I think Washington could have some ways to get around that.
For sure. Trevor Lawrence, I know, had like a 40-yard run earlier this year. And it's like, if that's Jaden, he probably scores on that thing. So those opportunities are definitely going to exist. Obviously, one of the reasons why Cleveland's not as good defensively is because they're on the field forever, because their offense is real bad. When you look at the biggest problems for Cleveland offensively, what are they?
Nothing works together. And I think that's kind of been a problem since, you know, they brought in the quarterback that they brought in. It hasn't completely meshed with the, you know, Kevin Stefanski version of that offense. And they, you know, they brought in Ken Dorsey this year to kind of be the offensive coordinator, bring in some of the, you know, the Buffalo Josh Allen things to run a bunch of empty, which Deshaun Watson was more comfortable with. Those things just haven't meshed together. And I think every problem that Cleveland currently has in its offense is just kind of compounding on itself. This offensive line is injured. It is not good, and also is protecting for a quarterback who likes to hold on to the ball but cannot create when he does that like he used to be able to. So those are things compounding against each other. Right now, Watson is getting hit on 26.8% of his dropbacks. That's the second highest rate in the league behind Jacoby Brissett, who's only playing quarterback because that offensive line is bad and they want to protect Drake May. So Deshaun Watson right now, I think there's two games so far this year where he's been hit at least 14 times in a game. And those are, you know, official quarterback hits. So there's probably more times he's been hit. So when you just have that passing game right now that just doesn't have any consistency or anything they can really lean on, nothing works. And then you have some of the receivers who are making mistakes when things could potentially go well. You have an interception last week that hits Amari Cooper like in the chest. And those have just been some ups and downs. And this team just, without a good running game, they just don't really have anything to rely on right now. And everything they could potentially be doing just kind of feels like it's making everything else worse.
If they were to get a guy like David Njoku back, is that enough to change things? Or is there just, like, do they need a full philosophical flip of running the football and getting back to who they were a couple years ago if they want any chance, no matter who the personnel is right now?
Yeah, I mean, the more good players is going to help in some case, but I think right now, just this entire system is, I think the system in a way is broken because they're trying to fit so many different pieces of different systems together, trying to make everyone happy. And I think that's just kind of impossible in the way they're set up right now. And the current skill set that the quarterback has, he's not comfortable with the under center play action. He hasn't been able to execute that in the couple of years that he's been there. And the part that he's supposed to be good at, that empty, the distributing the ball, the creating out of structure, that has completely gone. So right now, I just don't know what they're supposed to be good at. And, you know, if you get Nick Chubb back, he's still coming off this significant injury. So I don't know how much you're going to be relying on that if you can, you know, later in the season. So it's a really tough thing to see how Cleveland really corrects itself on offense, because I just don't see an easy answer.
Yeah, I would feel bad for them if they didn't do this to themselves with just abhorrent decision making. But, you know, sucks to be you sometimes, Cleveland. In fact, most of your NFL history. Yikes. All right. To the quarterback rankings, Dan Pizzuto, 33rd team. So, Dan, before I ask you specifics, how do you try to go about ranking all 32 quarterbacks in the NFL? Because you definitely do, like, move some guys up and down in reading this column. Like, there are some guys that will swing 4 or 5 spots in a week, up or down, depending on how things are going. But I also know that you don't necessarily want to, you know, overreact to 1 week. So, like, Jaden has rocketed up the rankings, but only to so high because he's still a rookie, and you probably start him near the bottom because of that. So what's your methodology as you try to do this to both, like, be accurate, not get yelled at on the internet, but also not, you know, be able to speak what you actually think about these guys?
Right. So I have not figured out how to do this without getting yelled at on the
internet.
The answer is
you can't. So you should probably just give up that part of the equation.
Right. Yeah. So that is not part of the qualifications at all. So what I'm really trying to look at is kind of what the skill sets of these quarterbacks are. And really, that's what I'm ranking. So, you know, the Monday through Tuesday is spent watching all of these guys. I have a bit of a rubric that I'm kind of grading with. And, you know, it's things like, you know, a pocket presence, arm, like accuracy, just kind of how these guys are playing in, you know, kind of a vacuum. And I try to do that as much as I can to really, like, show what these quarterbacks are doing themselves. And that's going to, you know, be an impossible, you know, kind of thing. But I'm trying to, you know, do my best in what I'm doing. So really what I'm trying to rank is the skill set of how these quarterbacks are playing. And I do have a bit of a grading system that I am basing these rankings on. A small enough grading system that, you know, a good week can potentially, you know, move some guys up. I don't want to be so stuck in a way where, you know, Patrick Mahomes is a, you know, 105 on this, you know, ranking, and the next guy is like an 80 something. Like, the grading system is closer, so there is some more movement there. But I'm also, you know, trying to look at what these guys have done. Like, you know, Jared Goff is a good example. He had the 18 for 18 performance. But I didn't learn a lot about Jared Goff in that game. I know when he's protected and he has some open throws, like, he's going to make those throws. So I'm trying not to do that. I'm trying not to have a rankings that, you know, had Derek Carr as number one after 2 weeks. Like, I don't think that serves anyone to be kind of looking at quarterback performance and say that Derek Carr was the best quarterback, because he wasn't. What he was doing was still kind of like an average quarterback in a great system. And I think we've kind of seen the past 2 weeks where that hasn't, the system hasn't been as well, the situation hasn't been quite as good. And we've kind of seen him be, you know, Derek Carr again. So I'm trying to, you know, have that equilibrium of how well these guys are playing and what these guys are actually doing themselves.
So if we take, I'm going to take Jaden out of it, because that's, I'm not trying to get you yelled at by the Commanders fan base on the internet. And obviously, if you say anything other than Jaden is God right now, then you're at risk of that. So Jaden Daniels, even though he's ranked 16 in Dan's rankings, he's actually secretly number one. Just don't tell anybody else.
Right.
How does your ranking system have, say, Kyler Murray over Brock Purdy? As Purdy has done, you know, an incredible job at his job, Kyler's been a little bit more up and down as his, but we all can acknowledge the difficulty of said jobs are different. So how do, like, what are the areas of the scoring rubric that have landed Kyler at, I think it's 9, and Brock Purdy at 13?
Yeah, I mean, they're actually, like, somewhat similar in – you know, where I am, you know, grading. But I think when you kind of look at Kyler with his, you know, the arm and some of the, you know, out of structure things he's been able to do. And again, like, I am also have like a bit of a baseline of what these guys have been in their career also is kind of where they started. And I've been building off that. So Brock Purdy is interesting because I think he's probably, I've been more impressed with Brock Purdy this year than I have when he was, you know, somewhat MVP candidate last year. I think he's definitely doing more this year, and I have moved him up, I think probably higher than I would have expected from where he was when we started these rankings. But he's throwing the ball down the field more. He's doing it without, you know, a great production from, you know, Brandon Ayuk. There's been no Debo for a little bit. There was no Kittle for a game. There's been no Christian McCaffrey at all. So I think, like, he still does get the benefit of having some of these open throws in a Shanahan system that I think, you know, a guy like Kyler does have to create a little bit more on his own to do. And I think, you know, in my grading a little bit, I'm going to lean more toward the guy who's able to create a little bit more on his own. I think, you know, Purdy's been bailed out a little bit sometimes by, you know, he's throwing a lot of these contested catches, which look like incredible throws, but it's also like the receiver is doing some help there. So it's a balance. But like those two quarterbacks specifically, it's a lot of these gradings for some of these guys are very tight. And like, I wouldn't, if you want to say, you know, Brock Purdy is slightly better than Kyler, like, I wouldn't disagree. But just kind of where it comes out, and because I have to have a number on these guys, is kind
right
of where, you know, where I'm at this point.
Yeah. This is exactly why we do, when we do our NFL, power rankings every week, we do it by tiers, because the separating within the tiers is impossible. So they live in the same neighborhood. A guy that used to live in a nicer neighborhood that has slipped down to 18th in your rankings and is perhaps one of the biggest mysteries in the NFL right now. This will be the last thing I want to ask you about is, like, the short version of the question, Dan, is what the hell has happened to Trevor Lawrence? The long version question of the question, Dan, is what the hell has happened with Trevor Lawrence? What has gone so wrong for him this year?
Yeah, so I actually just wrote about this for today. So it's one of these things where the offense and the quarterback, I think, are just not completely meshing. And it's one of these areas where I think you can kind of see where Trevor is still a very good quarterback. He still has some of this arm strength, and he's making some great throws. In the beginning of the season, he was throwing deep, and that's kind of one of these things that we wanted to see, you know, from him and this offense, be able to push the ball a little more. We kind of hoped with, you know, a Brian Thomas Jr. and a Gabe Davis, they would do that, and then they have been. I think what has been the problem so far this year is there's not a lot of easy answers in the offense. And while we wanted them to push the ball down the field more, it's almost been exclusively that. And that is just lowering the margin of error so much for what this offense has to be. And Trevor kind of has to be perfect on almost every throw for this offense to really be working, because there's not a lot of those, you know, easy, short, you know, middle of the field type of throws overall in this offense. And so right now, like, Trevor just has to be pinpoint accurate on all of these throws that he's pushing down the field. And he hasn't really been able to do that. There's also been a lot more pressure on him with this offensive line not playing quite as well. And I think think you can kind of see that in how he's anticipating the pressure. That's been, I think, throwing off his footwork, so throwing off his accuracy a little bit. So there's just a lot of different things compounding. And when you, you know, hear Doug Peterson, as he was talking about, you know, there's some execution that as the coaches, we can't be making the plays for them. And that is true to a sense, where there are some missed opportunities here, but there aren't a lot of opportunities in the offense that are just kind of, you know, letting Trevor kind of, you know, take a play off for a better sense and just kind of finding a quick, easy option. So everything is just so difficult. It's, you know, go routes down the sideline. They don't really have a lot of hot answers against blitzes. Those are all go routes too. So it's just the degree of difficulty in this offense is so high. And part of why they're doing that is because Trevor is a talented quarterback who can, you know, potentially pull that off. But when you have to do that down after down after down, it's just, it's really hard to be pulling off consistently. And I think that the weight of that has really kind of gone on Trevor too. And, you know, he's starting to bail from some cleaner pockets, and it's really affecting how he's playing. So it's just none of this is really meshing together. And it's really kind of been tough going for, you know, how they think they're going to be able to, you know, move forward.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And, you know, I can't help but draw the comparisons to what we saw with Bienemy here last year with Peterson, former Andy Reid assistants that leave the Andy Coop and take the most complicated stuff that works when Pat Mahomes is your quarterback and seem to forget all the other stuff that you need when Pat Mahomes is not your quarterback. If you were to put Trevor Lawrence in any offense in the league, like what offense would he be best in?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you put in him in like one of these, you know, Shanahan, McVay type of systems, like if you put him in Minnesota right now, where he has a good play action game, he's got two good receivers to throw to, that he can still push the ball down the field, kind of like Sam Darnold's doing. You know, that I think he kind of, I don't want to say he would be like the Matt Stafford going to a Sean McVay and kind of opening up that kind of offense in the way Stafford did, but I think it would be, you know, close to that rather than, you know, even, you know, a Darnold or some of these other guys that we've seen kind of been able to go in and have production. So I think when you have some of that, the play action heavy type of system where you still have the vertical shots that he can hit, but you also have a lot of the, you know, open in breaking routes, there's just those things just aren't in the Jacksonville offense right now. This is a team that doesn't use motion really like at all. They're second lowest in like motion at the snap. So as we see so many offenses right now be able to, you know, just create openings off of that motion at the snap because you just have someone moving at the time. It's just that this Jacksonville offense just kind of like looks like it was still like the 2017 Eagles offense. And, you know, 2017 might as well be like 30 years ago in how much offenses have kind of evolved in that time. So it just in a more modern offense that has a little more openings, more play action, more motion, just all of that stuff, I think Trevor could still really thrive in that. And I think just kind of the question is like, how mentally beat down is he to be built back up if he does get to be in one of those offenses next year?
Good stuff. Dan Pizzuti, you can read more about Lawrence at the 33rd team as he's working on and finishing up that piece. And then, of course, first and 10, you can check out the heat maps and stuff that we talked about with Jaden Daniels earlier as well. Dan, great stuff as always, and we'll talk to you next Thursday.
All right. Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it.
That is Dan Pizzuti, everybody, with us here on The Hoffman Show. When we get back, hello, Cleveland. Yes, we're checking in with the Browns insider, and I promise not to do what I just did to his face.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.